way that we should be describing people as voice forward?
No, but no, I think maybe we've stumbled onto something here. Like,
did we just unlock something?
Yes. Why did they start writing this musical, besides that it came into public domain?
Like, that's a knock, but it's also not, because if you've got it, flaunt it.
Critique away.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to After Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, we're talking about The Great Gatsby, the musical. This is now the second playbill in the signed series, and you will see if you're watching on YouTube that I have two signatures here, and Steph has many.
I have five. So I got, who did I get? I got, obviously, Jeremy Jordan, Eben Elbazada, Samantha Pauly, Noah Ricketts, and the guy who played Tom. I must have gotten the guy who played Tom. Tommy Cannon.
Tom is played by John. I can't pronounce his last name. Something with a Z. Something with a Z.
Let me see if I can do it. No. Drodzeski. Something like that.
And this is an out-of-town review.
Yes.
We are, again, pre-recording this episode, but The Great Gatsby is now on Broadway when you are listening to this episode. I believe it is in previews, or it's open, one of the two. If it's in previews, it's a little more interesting because things could still change, which I think is interesting when we talk about this show as a whole.
Well, especially because the version we saw is the out-of-town, so our knowledge is not current.
Yes. So,
but still interesting to discuss.
Exactly. But as a blanket statement, this is a review on the out-of-town production, not the Broadway production, because we obviously have not seen the Broadway production. But yes, The Great Gatsby is on stage at the Broadway Theater. And we'll talk about whether that's a mistake or not as we go along through this episode. But let's start with the positives, which is we went to Paper Mill Playhouse for the very first time, which is in New Jersey. And a few things that we'll say is that these tickets were 30 under 30, and we were actually pretty, like, adamant about buying in advance for this because of the people that are in the show, and we knew that it would sell because it wasn't there for very long, and it happened to line up to the dates that we were in New York.
It was actually the final day of performances, the day we went.
There was one show that night, but we saw like the final matinee. And yeah, when we bought our tickets, there were still like plenty available, but like a week later, gone. So we made the right choice buying in advance, or we would not have seen this. But yeah, there are many ways to get to Paper Mill. We took an Uber, which like maybe is not the best. Like, we were canceled by our Uber because we were going to New Jersey is the first statement I'll make there. But like, maybe that's just because it was a Sunday and someone didn't want to drive to New Jersey, you know?
Yeah. We had looked into taking subway and trains, and I was the one who was pushing for an Uber because we had luggages with us and because we were heading straight to the airport after.
Yeah.
And one, taking, you know, transferring multiple trains. We're not New Yorkers. Taking multiple trains, and then also they only run, like, the specific ones we were taking were only running like every hour, so we were nervous getting there too close to showtime, and
because
then
we didn't have our tickets, we had to show ID, like all that stuff.
We had to figure out where to put our luggage. We thought it might be a little bit difficult, so I was like, let's take that Uber. But I do think you could train in and out from the city very easily.
And I believe it's like a 10-minute walk from the train station to the theater like area. The theater area at Paper Mill is so cute.
Beautiful.
It's a beautiful area. The theater itself is beautiful. It's kind of like Shaw Festival, Stratford Festival vibes of like there's like one little restaurant that's right across the street from the theater, and you can like walk around the entire perimeter, and it just kind of feels like family vibes, which is fun. But the theater itself is freaking massive. I was shocked at how big that theater was, which is not surprising to me that they are transferring to the Broadway theater, because that theater also very large.
Yeah, like they had a lot of they wanted a big stage for this, and so I think that limits you somewhat in your out-of-town options. But honestly, a beautiful afternoon. We could have gotten lunch or dinner or there, and that would have been, like, really nice. You could get drinks. You could sit outside. They had kind of, like, a step-and-repeat backdrop set up outside of the theater that we could take pictures in front of, which we did. It was just, like, a nice change of pace from being in New York City and seeing Broadway shows, being at this, like, more regional theater. I don't think it's a tour house. I don't think it has tours. I think it's just, like, regional productions.
Yeah, I actually have the show cup, which is the Paper Mill Playhouse 2023-2024 season. So, obviously, we have The Great Gatsby. Then, after, I think it's actually in order. Because I know that Fiddler either just finished or is currently still...
I think it was their holiday programming.
Record. Then we have After Midnight.
Fiddler is a holiday programming, a little bit interesting. A choice.
I mean, yeah. After Midnight, Gun and Powder, and then Beautiful. A Carole King musical. So similarly to how we always talk about these kind of shows when we review them, what was your pre-existing relationship with The Great Gatsby?
So, like many other people, I read The Great Gatsby in high school with my English class. And so that's basically where most of my knowledge of The Great Gatsby comes from. And it was one that I enjoyed. You know, some of the ones you read in English class, you know, don't necessarily speak to you. This one I always thought was interesting, good. I think it's very understandable once you read the book why people would want to continuously adapt this over and over again. But beyond reading the book in high school, I'd also seen the Baz Luhrmann film, which I did not think, not that I didn't think it was very good, I didn't think it was a good adaptation of the book.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I came from that. I don't necessarily have like super strong feelings about The Great Gatsby either way, to be honest.
Yeah. Same here. It's basically the exact same. I think we read it in like grade 10, 11, one of those.
Yeah, something like that.
English. There was obviously a essay that followed after reading the book. Maybe an exam. I'm not even sure. But yeah, I liked the book when I read it. And then obviously I've also seen the Baz Luhrmann, Leonardo DiCaprio-led Gatsby movie. I agree that it's not a great representation of the book, but I think that movie is so fun. It's my brother Tyler's, like, weirdly loves... He loves that movie. It was on a plane when they recently went to Japan, and he watched it. So we've watched that movie many times. And then, randomly, I went to see, when my family was in Vegas, a Baz show, and there was, like, a section of The Great Gatsby where they sang The Florence and the Machine... Green Light, which we will talk about Florence throughout this episode as well.
Yeah.
And it was like Moulin Rouge, it was Romeo and Juliet, it was The Great Gatsby, and I think there was one other, but I can't remember what it was. And it was a very fun, like, variety show.
Australia. Strictly Ballroom, probably.
Oh, it was Strictly Ballroom. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a very fun, like, variety show. And thinking back about that is kind of what I was hoping that this Great Gatsby would be, because it was so, like, 1920s forward. And I just feel like this production's a little confused.
Well, I think, to be honest, I think the movie, the Baz Luhrmann adaptation, falls into a lot of the same traps that this musical falls into, in that it focuses a lot on the 1920s. Or they got excited about making this because of the 1920s style, failing to understand, not even understand.
No, I do think it's failing realize, to understand.
Failing to understand. Failing to understand that, one, that kind of, like, disappears for the second half. Like, we're not in the fun 1920s parties anymore. And also, it seems like a kind of excitement around these parties, whereas the book is kind of scathing about these parties.
Mm-hmm. The book is also, like, grungy, and this is so, like,
dirty,
pretty.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
It really felt, this adaptation, this stage adaptation, felt like the creators only read the spark notes of The Great Gatsby and then made this musical. I don't know if we really delved into the themes.
I mean, let's get into the creative team right off the bat here, because I do think that it is kind of important. I will also say, this is a situation I'm trying to find where it is, but in my playbill somewhere here is an insert of songs. So they were still working on this because it was out of town. So if this show is in previews when this episode is released, be prepared to see a slip, because I do think they are still trying to workshop something that they might never get correct. But
in a tangent, they almost ran out of playbill. They almost ran out of programs because it was the last day and they didn't want to give them to us. And we had to kind of like loop around to get some because they were not giving them to people.
Exactly. So the creative team of this is a book by Kate Carrigan, which let's talk about this for a second. I love Kate Carrigan, but not for this reason, because she is actually someone that normally is like doing music and lyrics. It's Carrigan and Loudermilk, for anyone that's like ever heard any of those songs. I love like How to Return Home. We've talked about the Mad Ones before on this podcast. She is known for music. She is not known for book. And I think she should still be known for music. We'll come back to that. Then we have music and lyrics by Jason Helland and Nathan Tyson. Now, this is the team behind Paradise Square. Now, I would say we would know what we're in for if we listened to Paradise Square, but that cast recording never saw the light of day. So we actually didn't know what we were in for.
It's in jail. It's stuck. Garth Drabinski's old cell. It's in his cell.
And we still don't know if those people have been paid for recording that cast recording. So when you put those three people together, we should have known. But also I was like, oh, Kate Carrigan does really good music, so I hope that she can do something great with the book. The book is so tonally incorrect for the book of the book. And the music was written straight for Jeremy Jordan and nobody else. So it's very confusing. We have a lot of acoustic guitar when we should be playing the saxophone and trombone.
It's very odd that they've gone for this, like, over-the-top... Well, it's not odd. It makes sense, but it doesn't make sense. They've gone for this very... There's this, like, extremely musical theatery style.
Yes.
Of music and of storytelling in this. And I don't know if that is quite the way... I mean, it's hard to figure out where to, like, critique. Because we're here at this point. We saw it out of town. And when we saw it, we knew it was Broadway-headed, but it didn't have dates yet. And now it has dates, obviously. So at that point, we were thinking,
I would change this.
How can we fix this? How can we do this? How can we... Whatever. Literally, and to be honest...
Yeah.
Like, to be honest, maybe they are changing a lot of this, but I don't feel like the bones were there. Like I don't feel like the bones were there that they can work around. I feel like so much of what is fundamental to this production is what is wrong with this production. Mm-hmm. And so I think they're kind of stuck... I could be proven wrong. Maybe people will rave about it when they go see it on Broadway. But I just feel like they really missed the mark in the adaptation.
Yes, I agree. Because this to me could just be like any story. It doesn't need to be like The Great Gatsby specifically based on like what we saw on stage. I actually disagree. I don't think much is going to be changed for that first preview. I think they are probably going to put it on stage as is to see how people... react to it. But like the general consensus of Paper Mill Playhouse's production was that this show is not good. It is like pretty, it's so pretty. We talked about it at the end of last year. It's such a pretty show. They use projections in such a beautiful way. The set is gorgeous. And that's it. That's literally it. I remember before we went, I was reading all of these different, like, reviews on Broadway World, and the general consensus there was that, like, the set is great and everything else is bad. And I, like, it's funny to say that if you've been listening to this podcast for the 6 years that we've been doing it, there are two people in this production that I absolutely love, and one of them is horribly miscast for this show. The other one is fine, but one is horribly miscast.
I think she's good.
Yeah, so it's led by Jeremy Jordan and Evil Nobislada. And when this was first announced, we were like, oh, gotta go, because like we love these two people, right? Like to hear them sing together is like worth the $30 price tag as far as I'm concerned. But like Jeremy Jordan is not a Jay Gatsby. Sorry.
He's so miscast in this. It is bizarre. I also think the characterization that is written for Gatsby is really wrong. I think he's way too present in this show.
Yes.
I think they need to pull back on Gatsby. I mean, this was like This was a critique that everyone knew from when they released that first clip of the opening
number. The rehearsal room. Yeah.
In rehearsal. Everyone had this critique. And, like, after seeing the show, I still have that critique.
I wish I would have been, like, recording us when we were standing in the security line at the airport trying to figure out how we can make this show better. And I think what we kind of came to was that, like, it needs to be more dirty, one, and that, like, Gatsby's presence needs to not be so prominent at the very beginning. He's supposed to be this person that, like, you hear of, but you never see.
He's like, he's kind of this, like, ominous, mysterious figure.
Yeah.
You know what? I wish, did they have this? Are I making that? I wish they had, like, kind of a catwalk at the top. Like,
I don't think so.
Top half. I don't think they had this. I wish they had, like, a bit of a catwalk. You know how in, like, did they have one in Frozen almost?
Yeah, they do.
Like a bridge kind of at the top. I wish they had something like that. That, like, Gatsby could, like, walk and, like, look over the parties. Like, have the parties be happening, have the big dance numbers, and have him kind of be, like, up there, you know, watching and overseeing instead of, like, being in the middle of it, being in the thick of it, you like, know, the introducing the audience.
The fact that he sings that opening number is so incorrect. As much as I don't like that opening number, it is very catchy. I could hum it for you right now. But I think that there's a way to do it differently. The one thing I will say that I did like about that number is that we do get it again as if, like, the cycle kind of, like, repeats itself. I just wish it was, like, a silhouette of Gatsby. Or, as you said, like, what if he was walking across the bridge or, like, back to the audience, but, like, looking out at his party scene happening in, like, that song needs to be slower and grungier and dirtier.
That's, like, just more mysterious. Just yes. More, you know, like...
Not so, like, creepier musical theater, jazz hands. Yes.
Like, at the end of the show, they kind of have him do that. They kind of have him walk out and, like, look at the green light in the distance. And
I liked kind of that.
Walk off stage. And I was like, that should have been how the show started. Should have been how the show started. Just, like, establish the tone with that. Yes. I think, like, at the core of this is... I think people get so excited to adapt The Great Gatsby because they're thinking 1920s parties, you know, fashion, excitement. But I don't think The Great Gatsby is the right story to be doing all that. It obviously has those elements in it. But if all you're interested in about The Great Gatsby is its time period, is its setting,
just do a 1920s.
Then I think you need to adapt something else or do an original story. And I understand that, like, the name Great Gatsby just has so much audience appeal. Like, people are so interested in just seeing anything with that name because it's such, like, a long-lasting property. And also, we do know it just hit public domain, which is why we have this one and this other one that we'll talk about later, like, both being into production at a similar time. But it does feel like the only thing that they really are excited about is the 1920s aesthetic and dancing and music, and not about telling the story that is being told.
Yeah, because I will say, like, even the Baz version, which is obviously, like, a sanitized version of this story, it's still kind of grungy, and there's still mystery in that movie. It's edgier. This is not edgy at all. Like, the only time that we see
it felt like a rom-com at some point, like a romance.
When they're doing that scene, which is in the book, in the bedroom with the shirts, I was like, what is happening right now? Like, it could have been done so differently.
That scene should feel unsettling. Like, that scene should feel like, girl, you in danger. Get out of there. And instead it's like, romance!
Any time that people were kind of like, oh, Daisy, you shouldn't, I could never relate to that because everything that we were learning about this characterization of Gatsby is like, well, why shouldn't she? Of course she should. Like, he's fine. There's nothing wrong. Like, everything is fine. It was so romantic, like, so romantic and lovely when, like, that's not what this is. The grungiest parts of this entire musical, where there's, like, a little bit of edge, is when we go into town and it's, like, Myrtle's sister's, like, brothel house? Potentially, question mark? Was it a brothel? I'm not sure.
I don't remember. It
was, like, there was a bunch of, like, women that were sleeping with men. A little grungy there. And then that anytime that, like, George, when we would go to, like, the car mechanic place, that was, like, the most dirty of dirty sets.
And that is, like, correct to have, like, the contrast, let's say, with you know, the high-class people versus, like, the low-class people. But even these, like, high-class parties were still illegal because of Prohibition. It should all have, like, a much more illicit feeling than it did.
This is the thing. Like, when people think of 1920s, they only think of, like, flapper, alcohol, dancing. But it was much, like, worse than that.
Yes, like, alcohol was banned, so these were not these, like, you know, public displays. This was, you know, in secret, in speakeasies.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, this should have been more speakeasy vibe than anything else.
Like, he was throwing these parties at his home, but, yeah, it was just, like, I don't
know,
it was very
here's my vision for a Great Gatsby musical. One, it's immersive. Mm-hmm. We're sitting in round table chairs as if we are...
Well, they have that immersive Gatsby experience.
I know, in London. Apparently it's amazing. In London,
But I my guess is it's probably very focused on 1920s aesthetic and not focused on telling the story. But maybe that's fine to just be like, look, we're focusing on this, we're ignoring this. Instead of this, which is trying to like do both.
I think they should make this kind of similar to the new Cabaret of like, you enter the Kit Kat Club, you're not allowed to have your phone. It's like a whole experience as you go in. Also like Moulin Rouge, you know, you walk in there, it's all themed and everything. Like, obviously that's not going to happen in an out of town, but like, to me...
Moulin Rouge, they did.
I know they did. But, like, Paper Mill is not quite the same level as, like, the Emerson Colonial. But, like, it's just, like, I don't know. I just, like, I wanted so much more for this. And this is one that, like, I think we all kind of walked in with, like, pretty low expectations, which is fine. But I thought that, like, my expectations would be surpassed because they were so low. And then they just ended up being as low as I walked in. So,
yeah. My vision for it, obviously, we need to cut Gatsby's part way.
We shouldn't see him until, like, halfway through the first act.
Yeah, he should not be so open with his emotions. Like, he's singing these, like, beautiful ballads about...
Daisy. You know what that is, though? That's Santa Fe. They wrote Santa Fe.
I felt so much secondhand embarrassment.
Oh my god, it was awful. It was awful. Although,
because I was just like,
did he sound?
He sounds amazing. He sounds amazing.
Incredible. No. He sounded so good. But what he was saying was horrible.
So embarrassing.
I've done it all for her. Put up each wall for her. All the plans I laid, all the options weighed. Every price I pay for her. Daisy, you fight and return only to learn that you have lost her. Daisy, my waiting is through. If you bring her to me, I'll be indebted to you.
Why is this character, and I think maybe not everything needs to be musicalized, or I think when you are musicalizing something, you have to be willing to take the risk, and not everyone needs to sing, or not everyone needs to have, like, 5 songs, okay? Your lead character, like, I'm thinking back to something like A Band's Visit, let's say, which wasn't my favorite, but that main character never sings, because he's so repressed, he's so bottled, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I think that's a very powerful thing to do, to have everyone be singing, but then to have a character be so, like contained. And I think that tells a lot of story in a way that maybe having him sing this, you know, schmaltzy love ballad has not told. I think you can tell story by, like, holding back.
I agree with you, but when you cast Jeremy Jordan in this role, there was absolutely no way that would ever happen.
I know, but let's talk about how he's extremely miscast. He's doing the worst accent I've ever heard in my life.
He's actually switching accents throughout the show because he doesn't even know what he's doing.
His acting is not good.
Everything. It's just not so bad. It's just bad. And I know what they were going for. I know that they were like, oh, leading man, everyone's favorite, Jeremy Jordan, obviously has to be Great Gatsby, but like, no, he actually doesn't, because it's not, I don't know. But he'll sell tickets, so do they care? I don't know.
Yeah, okay, back to my vision. My other vision is, okay, we love the 1920s aesthetic, so we have that, like, great opening number, which is, like, you know, wild, bold, whatever. I think we need to keep bringing it back. I think we were talking about this, you know, the ensemble, we lose the ensemble for so much of the second half of the show. Like, they're just not in the show anymore. I think we need to kind of have them maybe, like, ghost dancers. Like, as things are happening, you have, like, 3 or 4 dancers come on and do, like, choreography, like, in a slow, moody way. And they're just, like, singing things and, like, haunting Jay or haunting, what's her name? Never remember.
Myrtle? Daisy?
All of them. Haunting Tom. Like, haunting all these characters, or bringing, you know, bringing that music and bringing that ensemble, and you know, you get to see more beautiful choreography in different ways. And I think that would do a lot to, I wonder if, you know, if I don't want the character of Gatsby to be singing that much, if he's haunted by this, like, these, like, party girls in, like, flapper dresses and singing what he's thinking instead of him having to verbalize it. I think that could be, like, a more interesting way.
Yes. I also think, because, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like we don't get so much, like, internal thought from Gatsby in the book. Like, not in the same way.
It's not from his perspective, right? Right.
Yes.
Like, you get an outsider's viewpoint. I think that's interesting. That's why you get Nick. He's coming in as an outsider and observing all of these people. And I think you lose his viewpoint in this. Like, it's from, the book is from his POV and the musical is not from his POV.
Nick's POV,
yeah.
Yeah, the musical is from Gatsby's POV and that's wrong.
Yeah, it's more like omniscient. Yeah. Like, you see, like, lots of things happening, let's say. Whereas I think what's interesting about the book is that you're only seeing what Nick sees, right? So you're piecing together this story and everything from what he sees and what he hears about.
Right. As you were talking, because this is going to come up, so let's bring her up right now. I did just go to the Gatsby B-Way website, which is the other Gatsby, and they have updated their website, and it does say pre-Broadway performances begin at the ART May 25th. So I think we had discussed this, not publicly on the podcast, but we've talked about this before, of, like, obviously the Dueling Gatsbys is a thing, two very different visions. I can pull up the other Gatsby on my phone in a second, but, like, for those watching on YouTube, this is obviously the, like, classic gold, whatever, looks classic, like, the, yeah. It looks like the movie poster to me more than anything, whereas the Florence one is straight up silver, and it's darker, it's, like, there's, like, smoke in the background. I don't know anything about this production yet, but I can already tell you that I think it's going to be better than the one that we're currently seeing. If you ever watch Sweaty Oracle on TikTok, he calls this one the good Gatsby, not the great Gatsby. and I just think with, like, there's a way to either, as we were talking about with Back to the Future, do a direct adaptation, then there's a way to do something different, and then there's a way to do something wrong. And I feel like this one is kind of the wrong vision. And again, knowing nothing about the Florence one, I feel like they're taking so many leaps and bounds and liberties that whatever it's going to be, at least we can walk out of that and be like, oh, they tried something. Whereas this, they didn't try anything. Well, they tried something, but they tried something that was wrong.
Yeah, it felt like such a direct adaptation. But, like,
I don't think it did feel like a direct adaptation of the book, though. It felt incorrect tonally.
Yes, like, sometimes you need to swerve in order to capture the essence of an adaptation. Like a lot of times you think you need to drive, like, the exact same road, because plot-wise, like the events that occurred on the musical are exactly what occurred in the book.
Right.
So they drove down the same road, like, the exact same road, but yet they didn't, you know, capture the same essence of what happened. Whereas sometimes, you know, you can swerve, you can take a detour and maybe get the same energy or same essence. I mean, we'll have to see, we'll have to find out that something else did, you know, especially when you're working in different mediums, like, you're not gonna be able to do the exact same things that a book is able to do. Because you're just a different medium. You're telling a story in a different way. So you're going to have to think, okay, well, how does that work for the medium that I'm working in versus the original medium?
Yeah. The other thing, too, with, like, the Florence version and it opening, like, this summer in Boston first, it honestly feels like this Broadway transfer for the Paper Mill one was like, we got to get in here first. We need to
be. I agree. It feels like a race.
And it always kind of felt like a race until I saw, like, how far apart these two shows were happening. But, like, I think everyone would agree that seeing what we saw in that theater, like, it was not ready for Broadway. It's still not ready for Broadway. So I don't know. Oh, yeah. If they're just doing this for, like, a potential nomination here. Like, I just don't understand why this is happening.
Yeah. I mean, as we speak about this, like, extremely crowded Broadway season, sometimes you don't really have a choice in those things. I know we've been like, everyone should hold off, but sometimes the theater is ready and you don't know if the theater is going to be available, you know, a year from now without you paying rent on it, let's say. So then you're dumping money into something. Yeah, you get into kind of like trouble in that way. It's like, the theater's open right now, this is what's available, I can't guarantee it'll be ready next season, mm-hmm. so we gotta jump on it now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't, it doesn't feel like they're, you know, going to Broadway because they're like, wow, we have the strongest show we could ever write. It feels like being rushed to Broadway when it's not ready. Who knows, maybe they do feel it's ready. Based on my experience of watching it, I disagree, but maybe they do feel like this is the best it's gonna be.
Yeah. The other thing, too, that I think is, like, kind of the wrong way to do this part, or maybe, like, not enough, but, like, to me, the green light is almost a character in that book, and here it feels mm-hmm. basically non-existent, even though they're, like, trying with their advertising online to, like, have a flicker of a green light. I mean, they literally have a song called Green Light, but it just mm-hmm. doesn't feel...
My green light.
It just doesn't feel like it's evoking the correct emotion.
Like,
it's
longing of like...
There is no... Like, in this musical, there is no longing because he gets to her so quickly and they, like, have this relationship so instantly that it's like, well, where was the, like... She's unavailable. Because to me, in this version, she's always available for him, you know?
Only heaven knows what I might do if I save you. Will you save me too?
Save me too, my green light, blinking permission, sending a
odd. It's just like the whole thing felt just like odd.
But please tell us how much you like Sam Holly.
Oh, she was fine. I didn't.
I feel like you walked out of that being like, she was my favorite character.
Oh, I thought she sounded really good. I thought she was good. Like, I don't feel like strongly about any of the performances in this, really.
It's true. Nothing was really like standout.
I think, like, I thought Eva Nobilizadeh as Daisy was, like, good characterization, good acting. I think they, like, kind of, like, got her character a bit better than they got Gatsby's character, and I felt like she played it well. I think she was, like, cast well as this. I thought Myrtle was good. Myrtle? And what's her husband's name?
George, right?
George. Wilson.
Or Wilson.
Yeah, Wilson.
Is his name even George?
He was good.
Yeah, George Wilson,
I thought he was, they were good as well.
There is, at this time, one recast here. Stanley W. Mathis, who plays, like, Meyer Wolfsham, has been recast by Eric Anderson, which could give this character more to do, just because Eric is obviously, like, a Broadway staple at this point. Mm-hmm. I felt that, like, someone should be kind of narrating this version of this show. And maybe...
If it's not Nick.
if it's not Nick, who is played by Noah J. Ricketts, who is fine in it, but honestly really has zero to do in this show. Even the, like, Jordan-Nick relationship is very fast-tracked, it feels like. Everything feels, like, very fast-tracked in this
But yeah, like, they're doing this, like, rom-com, like, dance outside of the house, outside of a little cottage when Gatsby fills it with flowers. They're doing this, like, little, like, cute choreography moment. I don't know, everything was, like, too cute, too
sweet. It was too nice. Everything was, like, so lovely, and it shouldn't be.
Everything should have an undercurrent of, like...
death.
Yeah, like, it should all feel, like, very, like, melancholy and, like, I don't know, everything, like... Yeah, it just tonally was very weird.
And then, like, especially, like, at the end, even though, like, spoiler, he dies, it still felt like it was, like, tied up in a nice little bow. You know? Although I will say...
He fell off that stage.
If we're going to talk about the best part of this production, it's the pool. The pool is amazing. And he falls directly into the orchestra pit. And I Loved that. That was my favorite part.
It's been described like the front of the stage was like tiled like the inside of a pool, and there were like pool ladders that go down into the audience. So if you've seen The Great Gatsby, you know, oh my god, like you're like the ending, the pool, so exciting.
Yeah.
And then so at the end when he's shot, he just like falls off the stage into the pool, which is the audience. And then they also have like the blue like wavy light going on the stage, so you're like in pool. No, I was like, this is great. I mean, beautiful, really, really beautiful set pieces. Like, talking about that cottage filled with flowers, really stunning. I mean, the best part, I think, is the billboard.
The eyes.
The eyes of TJ Eckelberg or whoever. Like, that looked exactly like I always thought it looked. You know, the house. Just beautiful. The cars. The cars.
The drivable like, cars. Really, they literally drive for real.
They do. I think I saw that in
it was like a behind the scenes TikTok or a vlog or something. Yeah.
You're like driving the car, and it's like operates like a real car.
Yeah.
Really, really. Again, this is one of those shows you can see where the money was spent. Like everything looks expensive and looks as it should. Everything really looks like it's so much practical set like integrated with projections. They like enhance practical sets with projection.
It's literally
instead of like replacing.
But it's some of the like clearest projections I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know beautiful. What they're using projector wise, but like it's almost as if it's like movie level. It's very, very impressive. And as I said at the beginning, like this is such a large stage at Paper Mill.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that projection screen is freaking massive. So, and I know the Broadway can do it because I've seen it with like King Kong with a gigantic projection or projector screen. So they definitely can do that there. I just have like so many like why when I think about this show specifically. The other thing, getting back to the musical numbers, there are way too many songs in this show because so many of them serve no purpose at all. It's just like, as you said, it's a musical. So we got to make it super musical theater. And they chose this like musical theater genre. And if they're sticking to that, then you got to sing as much as you would in like an old timey musical. And I just don't think mm-hmm. that works for this specific story. I don't know. There's like so many question marks beside this. To talk a bit more about the Florence, should we talk about rumors of what we've heard?
Well, it's interesting to talk about rumors because we're pre-recording this and maybe rumors will be confirmed by the time this is coming out.
It's not in Boston until May. So there is some time.
No, I know, but if this is coming out in April, let's say, maybe they'll have announced a cast or something. There are many rumors. Who have we heard rumored? Rachel Zegler.
So, again.
Darren Criss. Isaac Powell. Jonathan Henry.
Wow. So... Again, we are pre-recording this episode, but mm-hmm. I am hearing from, as previously mentioned, Sweaty Oracle, who is like really sources. Got all of the information on all things. I don't know, who are his sources? If he ever listens to an episode, like, can you please let us know who your sources are? Because crazy. According to him, this is obviously rumors, and this is old now when you're listening to it, but... Darren Criss is no longer attached to the project since he has taken on Little Shop of Horrors. So he is out of Gatsby, which is...
But he'll be gone from Little Shop by now. Left Little Shop by now.
He's just, like, no longer attached to the project. Apparently there's another workshop happening before the Boston mm-hmm. production. Rachel Zegler is also no longer attached to the production.
Interesting.
Isaac Powell is 100% attached to the production. Now,
I like him as like a Nick Carraway, as a Nick Carraway character.
No, he is attached as Gatsby.
No, that's so bad.
I agree that he's a Nick. I don't think that he's a Gatsby. But that's everyone's so kind of like, remember when we didn't know what he would be like for Tony and then he was actually like revolutionary? I think they feel like the same thing is possible here. I just feel like this Gatsby is not...
He's so young.
Maybe that's what they're going for. Because Rachel would have been so young too to be his Daisy.
Yeah, but Daisy is young. I don't know. Feels young.
I don't even know how old Isaac is.
I want someone with more presence.
Well, we also heard Josh Henry, which I think is much better.
I like that as a Gatsby.
I still think that Isaac is, like, a Nick, to me, at least. And that's not saying that, like, he couldn't still be, like, Tony nominated for this role. Nick should be a bigger role than he is.
Yeah, but, you know, this is the thing, right? I guess... It's hard to, like, truly have judgments of this. If this Florence production is truly so, like, avant-garde as we've been hearing, maybe, you know, our, like, preconceived notions of these characters should go out the window if they're doing, like, really different things. This production seems to try to be, like, a really direct adaptation. So I'm going off of, based on what I feel and what the intention was in the book. And that's why I feel like certain people are miscast. And if you're saying, well, they were going for something different, it's like, it doesn't actually appear that they were going for something different. They just didn't do it right. Whereas if they go so avant-garde and so out of the box with this other production, then it's hard to make a judgment on whether someone is miscast or not. Because what is their goal, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like, anytime I hear anything that's going so far off of the original source material, I only think of West Side Story 2020 because that was so far off the original source material.
Right. Well, I'm thinking, like, Oklahoma, right?
True.
Like,
true.
Something like Oklahoma where, yeah, like, the source material, well, like, the source material was there. Like, the book was there. The script was there, but the characterization or the interpretation, the staging made it different.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that like we've kind of been hearing is that there might be some like natural elements involved here.
I've heard about sand.
And then also the like only thing on their social media that has any audio is waves. So
interesting. Because they look over water, right?
A lot,
like that's where the houses. The houses are across water. He looks over the water to see the green light. So,
and then just to like look at this production team a little bit, obviously Florence, who's doing music and lyrics. We also have Thomas Bartlett, who's doing the music. Then we have Martina M-A-J-O-K. How would you say that?
M-A-J-O-K?
Yeah.
Majok?
Okay.
M-A-J-O-K? I don't know.
She's doing the book.
Majok?
Who she recently won a Pulitzer Prize for The Cost of Living.
Interesting.
And then we have Sonia Taye for choreography, which...
I was going to say, this screams Sonia Taye.
Which, like, as you were speaking of, like, these, like, ghost flapper dancers, yeah, like, yeah. I want
like
to...
shadows.
I almost want to see, like, contortion?
Oh, interesting.
And, like,
yeah,
really,
cool,
like,
cool.
Weird, like, body... What's it called when you, like, are, like, breaking your bones when you're, like, dancing? You know what I mean? Like, kind of, like, contemporary,
yeah,
but, like, more than contemporary.
Yeah.
I want to see, like, weird movements.
Weird shapes, yeah.
Yeah, like, this is not, to me, like, a clean, which this one is, the paper mill one is,
mm-hmm,
like, a clean dance,
yeah,
choreography moment. And I'm just thinking of, like, my favorite thing that she's ever done, which is, like, Backstage Romance. I want that, like, grungy,
mm-hmm,
like, hit-hard choreography. Although, like, if we're going to be in the sand, I'm not really sure how this works. Like, there's so much going on here. And then finally, like, Rachel Chavkin is directing this show.
So.
You know what's interesting,
yeah,
about this? Where's, like, Diane Paulus for ART?
Where are you, Diane Paulus? Yeah, because she's an ART kind of. She's the ART girl.
Yeah.
That is very interesting.
I just don't think this is a Diane Paulus situation.
No, I think this is more of a Rachel Chavkin kind of show than a Diane Paulus kind of show.
Because I'm even
interesting, like,
thinking
like a female director, immersive. Rachel Chavkin did Great Comet.
Well, I'm also
right?
thinking about Hadestown and how, like, I know you don't like that show, but, like, when we think
mm-hmm.
of, like, grungy and kind of dirty, like, Hadestown does give us that. Like, it's...
I wish Hadestown was dirtier. I wish it was dirtier.
I wish it was dirtier, too, but, like, in terms of, like, Hadestown versus Gatsby, Hadestown is much grungier than, like, this Gatsby is. Like, just
yeah.
the whole set design in general. I wonder who's doing the set. There was a TikTok recently about rumors
mm-hmm.
of set designers, but I don't know who it was. I just, like, again... If you're gonna do such a well-known property, you either do it exactly as is, or you do it completely different. And to me, this Paper Mill Gatsby is somewhere in the middle, and that's its fault. That's its downfall.
Why do we feel, like, after seeing this version, after seeing this out-of-town version, do we feel, what do you think drove this specific group of people to adapt Great Gatsby at this time?
Like the creative
besides
team?
It, yeah, like, what do you think about it called them?
I think Jeremy Jordan and Eva Noblezada were available, and they wrote this show for them. I'm being serious.
I do think that whenever you write a show for, like, Jeremy Jordan's
he's a high tenor
voice, I think you kind of write yourself into a corner, because now we're looking at it and we're like, I don't know if Jeremy Jordan is right for this show, for this part, but now you're stuck because who else can sing these songs?
Right.
I mean, like, to be honest, like, we say cut the songs, but if you're not going to do that, who else can sing these songs? You've written yourself into a corner.
Because, like, think of Newsies, right? Which also started at Paper Mill. I would say that a lot of that score was, like, written with Jeremy in mind. Santa Fe specifically was written for Jeremy Jordan. And then everybody that came
in
after...
That's from the movie.
No, sorry. But the way that it's, like, it's the octave that it's written in is written for his voice. It's not,
sure,
like,
it's, like, it's orchestrated for him. Like, when you have
and
someone
also, like,
doing
when Christian Bale sang it, he was a literal child. So, like...
No, I know. But, like, yeah, like, when you're an original cast of a show, it is...
They're working with you.
It's natural that your talents, your specific skills, your specific vocal style, like, works its way into the DNA of a show.
But they had issues after Jeremy left Newsies, because they were like, oh, shit, no one can sing this high.
No one else.
So I literally think, like, I don't know who's understudying here, and I don't know that it really matters, but, like, I just don't think that they're going to be able to sing these, like, super high songs that are so specifically written for his tone of voice, and hers too, but, like, more so him, because he is so, like, his tone is so specific.
It's hard to find a man with that... amount of range, which
his voice. Range is out of control. His power of his vocals is, like, so beautiful, even though so miscast for this. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's one of those things that should this show last and should he leave, who replaces? Because they have to check so many boxes here to be able to vocally match what's been written for stage. Mm-hmm. And that's always, I think, just digging a hole for yourself.
It is always interesting also, because I like Jeremy Jordan. I really like his voice. As an actor, I don't know if I'm always a big fan. I don't know if he nails it to me.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
So,
there's a reason that he hasn't had, like, a breakout role on screen, because he's just fine, you know? I don't count the last 5 years.
No, I know. Well, the voice is beautiful, but... And, like... But without the voice, what are we doing? You know what I mean? Like, are we acting? Are we performing?
That's why I say, like, when you say, why was this done? Someone like him came knocking, or he has a relationship with these guys. I'm not sure. And they said, or it was presented to him. First of all, Jeremy Jordan, at this stage of his career, is not doing anything that he offer only one. He's also not doing anything where he's replacing ever again, unless it's something like a little shop where it's
like
an off-Broadway.
Like, short runs for fun.
Yeah,
like,
but he's not like
the 8-week waitress, the 8-week.
He's, like, not stepping into play shop. Like Christian and Moulin Rouge. Like, that's not happening. He's also would be horribly miscast for that.
Terrible.
But, like, he's really at this stage of his career, he's looking to originate a role that's written for him. And this is originating a role that was written for him. So why not? You know? Like, that's how I feel.
I would want to go further back. Let's excavate. Why did the
Kate Kerrigan, Nathan Tyson, and Jason Howland get together?
Yes.
I don't know.
Why did they start writing this musical, besides that it came into public domain? Maybe I'll see an interview. Maybe they'll have an explanation for that at some point. But I'm not really seeing another reason besides it's now in public domain. It's now available.
This specific version. I know why the other one is happening, Florence.
Well, like, and we will see the other version.
No,
we'll
I know.
Be
but,
able to make that judgment call then. But this version, I'm like, I'm not seeing where they're like, you know what? I've got an amazing take on this. I've really got something to say with this. I'm seeing we are putting what we saw in the book on stage with no further thought.
Mm-hmm. Which I guess is similar to your thoughts on
Back
to the Future.
No. I'm like, I'm serious. You know, these, like, direct adaptations. I'm always wondering, like, why?
The thing
and
is,
I don't,
like,
I don't know if this justifies its existence to me. Like, it's not why. It's not telling me why it exists.
To me, this just doesn't feel as, like, of a direct adaptation as, like, a Back to the Future does. Because it feels like they kind of got lost somewhere in the process.
Yes.
And were just like, here we are. This is the finished
product. I agree they got lost. But watching it, it's like every event that occurs on stage is direct from the book. Like they didn't take any like detours or anything, which is fine.
But yeah, are they gonna come out with an interview X number of months later to be like, we've been working on this for 10 years, then finally it came the public domain, so we said let's get this on stage. I really don't think it's that. I just don't see that happening in the future.
Do you remember at the end of Smash?
Yeah. Oh my god, they did talk about a Gatsby musical.
They got the rights to the Great Gatsby. That was like gonna be the next thing. They got the rights. They were like, Julia and Tom were like arguing over the rights to the Great Gatsby musical. Then Tom was gonna make it a, Julia was gonna do a play, and then whatever. Remember that?
I do remember that. The other thing that I'll say about the other one, so with the other one, I do, like, Florence obviously worked on the music for the
Baz one
movie. So she's been in a Gatsby conversation for years now. I also think that she's probably just like ready to venture into this world because sure. she's never done it before. And I do think it's interesting that the writer of the book is not a musical person, because mm-hmm. that shows me that they maybe have more care for the actual source material.
Yes. Than they're someone... They're approaching something in a different way.
Not to knock Kate Carrigan here, but I'm also like, girl, what else have you written? Because I don't think she's done a lot of
What books other books here. Are we doing?
So, I mean, yeah, go ahead. I'm looking.
I was going to say, I'm a huge Florence the Machine fan, so I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
For the music, at least.
Okay, so the only other one that she, it looks like she did, like, that had any sort of life was the unauthorized autobiography of Samantha Brown, which was then titled The Mad Ones. But, like, I'm not about to say that's her, here that it's
based that's her on, own like, work, right? Like, she wrote music, like, book and lyrics, right, for that?
Yes.
So it's but interesting I'm also for like, her to...
I've only listened to the cast recording. I have not seen that show, so yeah, I can't comment on the actual, like,
book.
I love the music. I think she's really talented when it comes to music. But I, other than the fact of, like, I don't know, I just feel like everybody and their mother could be like, I love The Great Gatsby, got to make it into a show. Like,
yes,
to
I'm
be honest,
seeing,
maybe the actual way to do this is a play. Like, maybe it is a straight play with
musical elements. Something. With dancing, with music.
Yeah.
With,
more
I don't,
like...
Yeah, I don't know if we need to be singing necessarily.
I don't think we just need to be singing Daisy's name every, like, 5 minutes.
Daisy!
There's reprise after reprise after reprise of him singing a song.
He belted it out. He sounded good.
He sounded good.
Health,
there may be
health.
Our bootlegs on TikTok, but
that
he sounded
health.
Good. The
I'm
other thing,
at,
I absolutely love... Eva Noblezada, but I do think that she has a very specific singing style.
Yeah.
Which I don't know works for this show either.
Oh, this is so interesting. I like, she kind of has like this like very like breathy, almost like baby, like babyish.
That's
tone,
not the part that I don't like.
Which I think works.
I don't like, this is just an Eva critique. She's
a
wonderful singer.
Critique away.
But she often, it feels like to me, she needs to, like, get up to the high notes. So she's always, like, double doing something with her vocal here so that she can, like, hit that higher note. I found this with Hadestown, too. But less so because that music is not like this. This is more, like, pretty. And that's more, like, one, she's singing way more in that show than she is in
the
show.
Yeah, you have, in that room, you have a bit more room to, like, play around with.
And that character feels like you can... stylize because there's like more freedom, whereas I feel like she's kind of trapped herself in that she needs to always stylize, and for this specific music I don't know that I need as much stylistic vocals from her as I would prefer more like straight vocal. I can't really describe it because I'm not a vocal teacher to know exactly what she's doing, but I do feel like she needs to get up to the higher notes, and I personally find that a little bit distracting as an audience member.
So
I think it's beautiful, but I just think that like every time, I don't need it every time, and I don't know if that's like a vocal health thing that she's gone through, because like she's... I don't know, like, sung so much in every show that she's in. She's never just, like, singing for the sake of singing. She's always, like, at the top of her register belting as loud as she possibly can. So, like, maybe that's now what she has to do to be able to hit these notes.
Right.
But then I say, maybe it shouldn't be her. even though I think she's good in it, and she's probably, like, one of the better cast members, it's just a little distracting to me personally.
Yeah. That's so interesting. It's, like, not something that would have, like, has, like, registered to me anytime I've heard her, just because, like, I just don't think about it in that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I do find sometimes you do listen to, I mean, the most obvious, well, I'll talk about the most obvious example, but I do think sometimes you listen to catch points where people sing, and you'll, like, hear their tricks to, like, get them up to a note. The most obvious one is at the end of Wizard and I, she says, like, wizard and lie, because to get that I out, it's easier to do it with, like, the L before, and it's just, like, sometimes you just gotta do what you gotta do to get that note on that day.
No, I agree, but I think for a character like this, which you said, like, the breathy, like, baby sound kind of works for that, however, then we flip into, like, oh my god, it's Eva Nobles out of singing, which I also can make the exact same argument for Jeremy Jordan of, like, as we had spoken about Hugh Coles committing to the bit for George McFly never losing, I feel that these two put on accents for their acting parts, but then we just flip into vocals of their true personal personas, which takes me out of it. I don't know if it was, like, two unknowns that were doing it, if I would feel differently, I probably would. But, like, again, we're hearing this terrible accent from Jeremy Jordan, and then he's flipping into his regular voice. And that, as a viewer, is not, it's very distracting to me.
Yes. That is,
I also feel like, in general, I always am, like, looking for vocal critiques, because, like, these are two very popular people, and I think I had said this, like, when we saw it, when it was at intermission, I think it was probably, it was, like, you and Shara maybe saying how much you liked her, and I was like, it just sounds like Eva to me, and I feel like she should sound like Daisy.
I feel like, okay, this is an interesting thing, because when you, let's say we're talking about a movie, and you see Meryl Streep in a movie, right? Even no matter how good she is in a role at this point in her career, she is Meryl Streep, right? And sometimes, and sometimes, like, the more famous you get or the more well-known you get as a performer, the less you're able to, like, disappear into your roles. And so the more someone, you know, replays that, like, you know, 8 bars from Wait For Me in Hadestown over and over and over again, the less Eva Noblezada is able to disappear into another role in the future because everyone is so attuned to every single, like, nuance of her voice. And the amount of times I've watched Jeremy Jordan sing is all coming back to me now when I hear him sing something else, like, hearing those, like, vocal, like, things that are so specific to him pulls me out in that way. Like, the more you get to know someone outside of their, like, acting and work, or even the more you see something in someone else when they do something new, the more you're likely to be pulled out. And does that make sense?
Yes, but also then you see something like Merrily, right, where we're watching Jonathan Groff, who I have seen in every possible medium ever. And to me, I was like, oh, that's a different graph I've ever seen before. So I don't know.
Some things work and some things don't.
I'm trying to think of, like, another example of, like, I guess Hadestown is another example of that. Of, like, to me, that part was written for Reeve Carney. So, like, anybody other than Reeve Carney is not doing it as good as he is because it's written for him. Which I guess is the same argument of, like, written for Jeremy Jordan. Anybody else that walks into it will not do it as well. But, like, someone like Reeve, like, disappears into that role because it's literally based on
It's such a perfect match between him and the character.
He walks in and out of the theater in basically the costume he wears on stage because that's how he dresses. But I do agree with what you're saying of, like, we are given so much and so lucky to be given, like, 54 Below performances on YouTube, or, like, Eva's always posting her, like, Green Room 42 on her Instagram page. Or, like, we're so, like, lucky to receive all of this, and it takes me out sometimes, and then you see a performance like Groff, and I'm like, oh, that's how you act. That's how you sing. Yeah, like, that's how you perform. I don't know why I feel that way.
And I do think, like, Groff in that performance is, like, such a perfect match to that character or the characterization that we're seeing.
But not once did I sit in that theater and I was like, oh, that's Jonathan Groff. Not once. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this show, all I could think about was, oh, that's Jeremy Jordan trying to play Jay Gatsby and doing a bad job.
Well, yeah, and, like, that was for various reasons, you know what I mean? That was for a multitude of reasons.
Whereas, like, not to say, and again, casting might be out, but, like, someone like an Isaac Powell does feel like someone that, like, disappears into a role. His Maria was the best thing we had ever seen on stage.
So good. So, yeah, I'm... If it is him, so funny. This is like, what a time capsule. If it is him, could be irrelevant by the time this is released. If it is him, yeah, like, this is an interesting thing, right? Because Isaac Powell is someone, a performer I really like, but whose voice is fine to me. Like, it's not crazy amazing to me.
He's a better actor than a singer.
Yes. His voice does the job, but it is in service of the performance, right?
Yeah.
Whereas these other performers, what we've been talking about, are like the voice forward, are voice forward performers.
I actually think that Darren Criss would give the same distracting effect to me as Jeremy Jordan.
Yeah, I think Darren Criss would also be bad, but I also think he's a Nick to me.
However, I never saw it, but his Hedwig was apparently incredible. So maybe he can character.
The interesting thing about Hedwig, again, I haven't seen Hedwig, but the interesting thing about Hedwig is like that character is a performance in itself.
Yes.
Right? Like that character is already kind of over the top doing different things. Like whenever you want something to be grounded, that's when we're like, that's when it's hard when you want a character to feel a bit more grounded, I think.
Mm-hmm. But it is hard. I think exactly what you're saying of like, we are almost like too exposed. Mm-hmm. Like these people are celebrities to us because we've seen them in so mm-hmm. many things that like the exposure limits, although maybe they're just not as good of actors as we think they are.
Maybe. No, but yeah, like I think Jeremy Jordan specifically is a very voice forward performer,
yeah.
singing forward performer, and other things are secondary.
And like, that's a knock, but it's also not, because if you've got it, flaunt it.
No, absolutely. Like certain things that's like really perfect for, you know,
yeah. like the last 5 years, although that movie is like kind of trash, that's a singing heavy, like
yeah,
show.
It's a
sung through show. So that makes more sense to be like voice forward than performance, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I know that I honestly though I could make the same argument that Eva is a voice forward performer at this stage in her game.
I agree.
Yeah.
She is an amazing voice, stunning voice.
I actually would have preferred to see her in the other Gatsby.
I think she would have been really interesting in the other. Well, I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll like see a clip from it and be like, absolutely not X immediately.
But she's worked with Rachel Chavkin before.
I know. But right now, like the mystery of that Gatsby.
I really
want
to
like,
go.
Getting me
I
so
feel
excited.
Like we need to figure out a way to go to this. We'll talk about it.
We'll discuss.
I just feel like when else do you have an opportunity to see both versions of the same property?
Both out of town.
Compare them.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like it's a very rare thing to do. And also, this one is pre-Broadway. And I feel like whatever happens at ART, there's potential for, like, stunt casting this and for New York. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm just, like, so interested.
I always love seeing a pre-Broadway because I really feel like it's a super interesting insight into the creative process. Like, seeing a show before its final form.
Like, only a handful
like
of people
me.
Got to see Shake It Out sung on stage. And we were one of them at Moulin Rouge.
Yes, by Florence and the Machine! No, you know, I really think it's like
only a select few audiences were able to see Aaron Tveit sing Chandelier. Only a select few.
only
what about Aaron? Do you think that Aaron could be a Gatsby?
I mean, vocally, but I just don't know if he's the right kind of actor for this.
He's also kind
I
of
think
a bad
it's a very
actor.
Specific. Yeah, no, we've talked about this before.
Although, that's why I'm so kind of interested in
he's
Sweeney.
Voice forward.
I know, but Sweeney feels like it's a combo, you know? Like, you gotta give both. But I also felt the same way about, like, Josh Groban, who's obviously voice forward.
Josh Groban is voice forward. But Josh Groban's acted. He acts.
Is this the new way that we should be describing people as voice forward?
No, but no, I think maybe we've stumbled onto something here. Like,
did we just like unlock something?
Because sometimes musicals, you know, we struggle with, like, we're like, is it the book? Is it this? Is it this? And it's like, what are they prioritizing? And a lot of times in a musical, it really feels like they're prioritizing the songs, understandably, but to the detriment of a book, to the detriment of a storyline, to the detriment of cohesion. And I think it's interesting.
Just love that, like, two people are talking about vocal performances who, like, the last time I took a vocal class was in grade 12. You've never taken one. And we
I actually did used to take voice lessons. Please. Obviously it didn't help, but I did take voice lessons for a summer when I was 9. So for you to slander me like this,
But we have no music theory knowledge. So yeah.
No. My voice lessons just committed. Just my voice lessons that I took were just me like singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow with my piano with this woman at the piano, like an Eastern European.
Did you go to someone's house?
No, it was at a studio. I don't remember where it was.
What was my brother's end goal here? Sorry, we're really diving.
What was the end goal here? I don't know.
Did you hope to be a singer one day?
No, my mom always told us when she was happiest, when she was like in school, when she was younger, was doing like arts classes. She was in band and in choir and thing. And so she always like put us in lots of art stuff. So I took art lessons. I took dance lessons. Obviously I took piano for a while. I took vocal lessons. I did theater camp. Like I did
so many
different things. Yeah. So I was just in voice lessons for my brother was taking guitar at the same time. And so they put me in voice lessons. So we were both there at the exact same time. Just like a half hour. I don't remember ever learning to read music whatsoever. I did take piano lessons for like a few years.
Wow.
Like nothing has stayed with me. This was even before that. So I was like little.
So musical.
I don't remember.
What a triple threat you are.
Terrible at this. I cannot play the piano. I cannot do a single thing on the piano. Like, please know that. But yeah, like, and I don't remember ever like learning to read music in my vocal class. I just remember, she would play the piano and we would just like, I would just like read, like sing the song with the lyrics in front of me and we would try to project.
Wow.
I don't remember any technique being imparted on me, but I just wanted to correct you there. I have taken voice lessons.
Sorry. Yeah, I took vocal throughout like grade 9 to 12, but like I know nothing. I was told that I'm a pretty decent like ear singer. Mm-hmm. So like if you hum me something, I can hum it back more than like looking at sheet music and be able to like do something about it. But that's really the extent of my vocal lessons in my life. So but we have unlocked a new term here, and we're going to be using it going forward when we can't quite figure out why something doesn't work. Are they a voice-forward performer or not? And I think it's a fair statement to make. Mm. We have two voice-forward people in this production, and maybe that's a downfall.
And sometimes you want something like that in a show. Like, let's say something like Six, maybe.
Yes.
Maybe that's what we're looking for.
Should all be voice-forward.
Yes, that's what we're looking for, but... not always.
But something that has a little bit more... actually, anything that has, like, a book should be acting.
It really depends. Because, like, Moulin Rouge, like, I've...
That's different, though.
I've always kind of been fine with Aaron's, like, lack of chemistry or whatever.
Well, here's the thing, too.
It's always kind of worked.
He's voice forward and a pretty face, so...
yeah.
He's got a couple things going for him there.
Wow, this, like, inadvertent Jeremy Jordan diss.
You know what? I love Jeremy Jordan.
Yeah.
What did we see him in that was like vocally, my God, so good? Was it the Stephen Schwartz night?
Yeah.
I think that was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he's like out there.
I would like buy a ticket to see him in concert.
This was the first time I ever saw him
on stage?
In a musical, I think. Like I'd seen him perform before, but this was the first time I'd ever seen him do a narrative.
I think me too. What else would we have? I mean, we did watch the taped Newsies.
Yeah. Which I also think he's good. He's good as...
yeah, because it's like he gets to play like... I don't know. Maybe he's a better character actor than like... oh, no.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe he should... No, but maybe he should be doing... maybe he shouldn't be doing like serious leads. Maybe he should be doing more like...
fun.
Fun things.
What else would I have seen him in? I don't think we've seen
him. You saw him in American Son. Remember you saw him
in American Son? Play. Ugh. I don't recommend. He wasn't a very good actor in that either. That's when I was really in my true peak fan.
Yeah, you saw American Son for that man.
With Kerry Washington. You know what? But it made me check off the Booth Theater for the first time, so.
Look at that.
And now I've returned again for Kimberly Akimbo.
Do you think Next to Normal is going to go back to the Booth?
So, did you read the rumors that... because Kimberly Akimbo was closing after the Tonys, it means that it will be able to go in for next season. And if they keep it vacant, obviously. They could do a very small run of a play.
Like a play run.
But yeah, let's bring Casey
Levy.
Theater.
It's a small-ish house.
I mean, if that transfers, I will also return to New York for that.
I know.
Apparently she is so good in it. We love Casey Levy on this podcast.
Yeah.
Voice?
Remember we saw her in concert? Remember
Voice
we saw her
Forward.
Voice Forward.
But she's also a good actor.
I think she's a good actress. Remember we saw her in concert?
Great.
Here? You had COVID?
I had COVID. Well, maybe. We're not sure, but I think it was COVID. It was January 2020. I was on my deathbed, and I still made it out to see Casey Levy.
Like, we're going.
With fever and all. Yeah, that one is another in the realm of Sunset Boulevard, different yeah. take.
I need to see next season take shape before I start playing.
Before you commit, yeah.
Yeah.
But with that being said, we will not be returning to see The Great Gatsby on Broadway because I no, simply do not see the point to have a rewatch of this one.
To sit through it again?
Even though we are a multiple viewing podcast, this is not one that I need to see again. I would rather see the other one first. But with that, let's rate it. What are you rating this?
I forgot about that. I'm going to rate this a 4 out of 10 feather in your headband.
Oh my God, that's so low. You only put this one number above Back to the Future?
Yeah, I did. I was bored.
Wow. I was also bored.
I was bored.
Yeah.
Honestly, the worst sin you can commit as a show is be boring.
Yeah, I don't even know how long it is, but it felt long.
It took forever. It was so long.
It felt forever because all he was singing was Daisy.
No, you know what? Wait, you know what I didn't say? I thought the best song in the show, to me, was Myrtle, before she gets hit by a car, sings a song called One Way Road. I thought that was a really great musical theater character song. I thought that was, like, probably, like, a really great character moment.
Someone we also have not discussed here before I get into my rating is the character of Tom, because he really was irrelevant to this production.
He was kind of irrelevant. I do think he had a really good villain face, though, the actor.
He was so chiseled.
Sharp,
really chiseled.
Sharp.
She had a sharp cheekbone. But that's another character that I think they really could have made, like, mean and grungy and kind of gross, and it was just like, well, this man's like good looking and I kind of trust him too, so whatever.
Yeah, we're not getting contrast between all our characters, and maybe that's the point. You know, they are kind of like all the same when it comes down to it, but you know, like, but
yeah,
whatever.
Okay, I'm gonna give this a 5 out of 10.
Wow.
What did you give it? Feather
Feather and a headband. I don't know if there were feathers.
I'll give it green cool. lights. Green light. Just, again, as we said at the beginning of this episode, we walked in with low expectations, but I still expected so much more. So much more. And really was just left exactly how I walked in. I just, like, Kate Kerrigan, if you ever listen to this, it doesn't even matter because the show is now open on Broadway, but, like, I have notes. Mm-hmm. And I'm willing to discuss them with you. but yeah, this is another one. Again, we'll see what happens come awards time. It's a very, very busy season, and I don't know that Broadway's faves,
sorry,
Eva and Jeremy, are going to make the cut. Sorry, we'll discuss them at some point, but like, they'll only be a discussion. I think they just live on a long list, which I don't think was what they were hoping for when they transferred this production.
It's a really crowded season. One of the most, I think, the most musicals opening ever. Like, it's a lot.
It's a lot. But yeah, that's our thoughts on The Great Gatsby, a new musical. And it's now time for our obsession of the week. Okay, Steph, what's your obsession?
My obsession is, as we all know, Closing in January is the new Stephen Sondheim, the final Stephen Sondheim musical, Here We Are.
The cast recording.
And the cast recording has been announced to come out this spring. Maybe it's out. The cast recording. But as a teaser, for this cast recording, they released kind of a 30, 35 second clip of the band playing some of the music. No one singing, but just the band playing some of the orchestrations from the show. And honestly, I listened to it and it just brought like the biggest smile to my face. It sounds so quintessentially Steve, like just the way that the orchestra is, you know, that horn section is going. It is just sounding so him. And that 30 seconds really sounded so great. It made me really excited to hear that cast recording. That's another one where, I mean, obviously for very interesting reasons, but, you know, they allowed the characters to not sing, to make a story point, to make a character point. Like, the act two, they don't really sing because the characters are not able to vocalize, or, like, they run out of
But also, wasn't it unfinished? Like, that's
It is unfinished, but I think it is unfinished, but Stephen Sondheim also, like, he ran into writer's block in that second act, and then they ended up, like, kind of working it into the show of, you know, we're not able to sing anymore. Anyway, so yeah, just hearing that 30 seconds just got me so, so excited for this cast recording and to hear kind of this, like, final piece of work be released to the world and to get to have a permanent record of that work with this amazing all-star cast. So it's kind of a pre-obsession with the Here We Are cast recording.
Maybe we'll check in with you later.
Maybe we'll check back in. Maybe we'll check back in when
and
it comes
see
out.
See if you actually still feel the same way.
But just that little piece of music just made me feel so good.
I haven't even listened to the snippet yet. My obsession this week, normally when I'm driving to work, I have, as we know, I'm an Apple Music listener on this podcast. Steph is a Spotify listener. But I have, like, I'm sure you can do the same thing on Spotify, but it's like a Tara radio station. So it just, like, plays me, like, the genre that I like to listen to. And every once in a while, this is kind of, like, in the same vein of, like, a Kate Kerrigan, who I listen to so much, like, I want to call them, I guess, like, musical theater adjacent, because it's written by people that typically, like, write in the style of musical theater. It's performed by musical theater performers, but it's not, like, written for a show. It's just written for, like, their own album type thing. So a song came on, and I was like, what is this? Who's singing this? It's really fun. And it's the song called A Little Bit. It's sung by Alex Brightman, and it's actually from the 2019 recording from Drew Gasparini called I Could Use a Drink, the Songs of Drew Gasparini. I never heard the song before, and now it comes up on my shuffle, like, every other day, and I listen to it all the time.
So you can handle anything, right? I'm a little bit scared, a little bit lonely, a little bit empty every day. I'm stuck in the city, my sleep pattern's shitty. It's kinda hard to explain. I've only found lately, though, that I've had this hard time finding my own way. I'm a little bit lost, a little bit found. I'm a little bit, hey.
Now, Alex Brightman, not a voice-forward performer, I would say. This
character-forward performer
as seen in all of his various things.
Every show he's ever done.
So I feel like I've never actually heard him properly sing before because I've only seen him either, like, in super comedic things or, like, Beetlejuice
doing,
was putting on
doing
a full
voice.
And
doing
I was like,
voice.
Alex Brightman, what a beautiful voice you have. So I've been listening to a few songs from this album. I really like this song and a random one to just, like, show up in my... genre of music radio station Tara's radio station plays. So that's my obsession this week as my AirPod starts to die right now.
Mine are actually doing quite well.
Wow.
If you're on Spotify, what you can do to get a similar thing is you search daylist in the search button and it will make playlists for you. So the first one is just your daylist, and mine is always like Wednesday afternoon musicals, Sunday morning musicals. But like it trains you train your own Spotify as to what you want to listen to at certain times of day of certain at certain things. But then they also have other daylists. Like you can be like, and they'll give you other daylists, and it picks from things you like and similar things. So that's kind of similar to, I guess, Tara's radio station.
Yeah, but also like if you've never ventured to listen to some of these like musical theater adjacent songs, some of the best stuff lives there. We've obviously discussed on this podcast, I think when we did our Jason Robert Brown episode, but like his specific album is so good. There's like many. Yeah. Many people that just write songs that were, like, maybe supposed to be for a project, but just, like, didn't quite work for...
A trunk song, if you will.
A trunk song. And some of them are so good. my vocal teacher in grade 11, like, showed us a lot of these, and it's been something that's, like, stuck with me since then. So it's just, like, if you're ever looking for someone that you love and want to hear if they've ever done something that's not, like, in a musical, just, like, search their name and see what comes up on YouTube. And that's how I found all of these, like, at the beginning. Or maybe it will be in your, like, everyday playlist like it is mine. So that's my obsession of the week. That's our thoughts on the new Great Gatsby musical, or maybe The Good Gatsby, as people are calling it online. And if you want to listen to any of our other episodes, you can do that by subscribing to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also watch us on YouTube, and don't forget to subscribe and leave us a comment.
And you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Off2BWayPodcast with the number 2, and on TikTok at Off2Broadway, also with the number 2.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.